All right. It is. It's good to be here with you guys this morning, particularly considering the last couple weeks. I have been traveling quite a bit, kind of been different parts of the country. This past week, I was back in Ohio and Kentucky, working with some of my business clients back there. And I was in Cincinnati, and it was kind of a crazy week to be in Cincinnati for two reasons. One, the election. Obviously, that was happening on Tuesday. Being in Ohio and Kentucky during this past election was a unique experience. The other thing that that happened in Cincinnati this past week, there was a court case going on. Some of you may be aware of this, but there was a court case going on related to a white officer that had pulled a black gentleman over and after a few moments ended up shooting the guy in the head. That court case was happening. It ended earlier this week. Unfortunately, yesterday they announced that the jury was hung. They couldn't make a decision, and the judge called a mistrial. So I was there in Cincinnati during the election and during this court case, and just different conversations with different people about both of those things. And it was really, it was a wide range of conversations that were happening. And it was helpful in one way for me to see just kind of the perspective of different people, but it also left me with a lot of confusion and anger and sadness and a whole lot of other emotions that I've spent the last couple of days just trying to sort through and figure out what's going on inside. And one thing that it did particularly is the whole time I'm talking with people and interacting, I realized how much I love you guys and how much I love being here and how important it is for us to have people that we know and we care about and that care about us and that we share our lives with and that we serve alongside of as we're trying to figure out what God is calling us to do in our community. So I just want to I just want you to know how thankful I am to be a part of Everyday Church and to be a part of your lives and have the opportunity to seek God and His Spirit and what He's doing in this church and through us, and to do that together is a privilege. So, okay, so several months ago, Wendy and Matt and I decided to do this teaching series that we're in kind of the middle of, this exiled, living faithfully in a foreign land. And we wanted to talk about this idea that this world is not our home, that like where we are here, this sort of earthly material place, that this is not our home, that our home is with God in His kingdom where He rules, that that's where we as Christians are residents and citizens. And here we're just sort of temporary in this world, and this is not our home, this is not our place. And that was the concept that we wanted to talk about in this series. But we had no idea that it would be as relevant as it is as we sort of process through and you look at what's going on in society and in the world over the last recent weeks and months. And I just find this particular series to be, it's been good. I've been hearing language as you guys talk about what God is doing in your lives and how He's using you and the conversations that are being stirred up. And I think God is using this to give us some language to help us understand the hope, where our hope really lies, that it's not in this world and what's going on around us, but in God and in His kingdom, and that we're a part of helping bring His kingdom into this world and praying for that. So it's been kind of fun to see how God is using this series. I sent a text to Matt a few days ago, and we usually, Wendy and Matt and I, as we're kind of writing and working on messages, we'll kind of text back and forth and share ideas and get encouragement from one another. I sent a text to Matt, and I was like, dude, I don't really know how to sort through all my thoughts and feelings and what I need to share on Sunday. And I mentioned to him that I was like, there's a part of me that wants to mourn, and there's a part of me that wants to shout, and there's a part of me that wants to encourage and assure you all and this church and what we're doing and how God is using us. And Matt's response, of course, was like, yeah, do it all. Do all of that. So I'm not sure that I'm going to fit all of that in during this next 20 minutes or so, but I am going to try to stick with what we're talking about in this series because I think it's particularly relevant to where we are as a society today. The story that we chose for today was the story of Esther, and I don't know how familiar you are with the story of Esther. It's a story that comes from the Old Testament. It's a book that's written in the Old Testament, sort of the history of the Jewish people in one stage in their history. And the book is titled by the main character. The main character of the book is this young lady named Esther. And the book's named after her. And I really encourage you to read it maybe sometime this week if you have a chance to spend some time reading through the book of Esther. But I want to warn you. I know that I've read it before in the past, but the thing that's lodged in my mind is like the VeggieTales version of Esther. I'm not sure if you've ever watched the like kids' stories or kids' books or whatever, and it's just sort of this, there's this sweet beauty pageant that happens, and all, you know, this, all this kind of stuff. That's all ridiculous, just to let you know. It didn't really go down like that at all. There's a lot of really, really dark stuff in the Book of Esther. Particularly, it starts with the abduction and sexual abuse of a whole lot of young girls. And it ends with the death of like 75,000 people in this sort of big conflict that happens. So it's not a fun book to read. It's certainly not. I've read it like six or seven times in the last 3 weeks as I was kind of preparing for today. And every time I read it, I'm just like, oh, it's a terrible story, really. But it's great because God shows up in a powerful way, and that's what we're going to talk about. So Wendy and Matt, over the last couple of weeks in the series, both talked about the exile of the Jewish people, and so they gave us a little bit of history of God's people and the way that they turned away from God. So the Jewish people, the Israelites, they were God's chosen people. He'd called them out to be his people and to be his representatives, really, in this world. But over the course of time, they turned away from him. They turned away from their God to the God that had claimed them and rescued them to other gods, these false gods and idols and all of this other kind of worship of all of these different objects. And they turned their hearts and their worship away from God into other things. And as a result of that, God allowed them to sort of receive the consequence of turning away from him, which namely meant that some of the nations around them and some of the larger forces and armies around them started to invade. Eventually, those forces came in and totally overpowered Israel and carried the people away into what we call exile. They were taken into exile and scattered across the known world of that time over the following 50 years or so. So the story of Esther takes place about 100 years after that happened. So about 100 years after a large army came in, crushed the nation of Israel, and then took them away and placed them in different places around the world. About 100 years after that, we find this story in Esther. And the Persian and Median Empire were kind of the empire of the day, and Xerxes was the name. He's got a lot of different names in different languages, but Xerxes is what we typically know him as, was the king of this time and the time of Esther. And he's the guy, he's kind of an awful guy, which you'll get it if you don't realize that already. So, okay, it's important before we kind of roll through the story to really understand who Esther was and what her experience was. She's a young lady, likely a very young teenager, and she was taken captive along with a lot of other young, beautiful girls. She was taken captive by the king's men and stuck into a harem. She was eventually forced to sleep with the king, and he went through this cycle of every night having a different young virgin to sleep with until he found the one that was the perfect one that he would name his queen. And so Esther was taken by the king's men and put in that harem, and that was kind of her starting story in the book. So to understand her life experience even before that, Esther, her parents died when she was very young. She was an orphan, scripture tells us. Fortunately, she had an older cousin who lived in the same city of Susa, and he took her in as his own daughter and took care of her. But shortly after that, sometime after that, Esther was taken by the king's men and then put in the harem. Beautified this year process of sort of fixing her up and dolling her up with perfumes and beauty treatments, and then she was forced to sleep with the king, and then was selected to be queen by this king. And I'm kind of thinking through the chain of events in her life. So her parents die, and so you see this just sort of crash in her life, and you think about emotionally what her experience would have been like, this crash as her parents die. And then over time, she reconnects, and her cousin takes her in, and she starts to develop a new family and have a new place, and then the king's men come, and they take her, and they take her into captivity. And then she's forced to sleep with the king, doesn't have a choice about this, and is then transferred to another harem and kept captive, essentially, through the course of her following years, like this sort of roller coaster of her life. And then somewhere along the lines, after this happens, she becomes queen. And now she's queen, but she's queen to this horrible, awful dude who actually, story tells us, continued this cycle of taking young women and forcing them to sleep with him. So that's her king. So becoming queen wasn't like, woohoo, I'm finally queen, I have power. It was queen in a kingdom that was terrible and to a king that was an awful person. So I can imagine, I try to imagine like what maybe Esther was thinking, particularly about God. So we know from the story that Esther was Jewish. She had not let anyone know that. In fact, Mordecai, her cousin, instructed her to keep that quiet, keep it silent. But she was one of God's chosen people. And she had grown up like probably enjoying the festivals of the Jewish people and remembering God's faithfulness and the ways he had rescued them in the past. And then she goes through all of this stuff, and I wonder what kind of thoughts are crossing her mind. Like, where is God? Like, I've heard all these stories about God rescuing, but where is he? He hasn't rescued me, certainly not rescued me from the trauma and the terrible things that I've experienced through the course of my life. Why has God forsaken me? Why hasn't he rescued me? So the next major plot line in the story involves a guy named Haman. And he was, through various circumstances, raised up to be the second in command of the empire under King Xerxes. And this guy was, he wasn't a great guy. He was kind of an awful guy. And but one of the deals was that Xerxes had told everyone in the city, in the capital, that they have to bow down to Haman whenever he passes by. So whenever this guy rolls through, it's your job to kind of get down on your knees and show him respect. Except there was one man who disregarded that. His name was Mordecai, the same guy who was cousin to Esther, who had taken Esther in. And Mordecai kind of seen the situation or the picture, like Haman rolling through, like on his horse or his chariot or whatever, all his nice clothes, and everybody just kind of falling down in the crowds in the streets. And you get the idea that he like played this up, like Haman really liked this. So he rolled along and people were falling down, and then he looks over and there's Mordecai refusing to bow down. And this keeps happening. And eventually other people start to harass Haman, like, dude, what's up? He's not bowing down to you. What are you going to do about that? You're going to let him get away with that? You're going to let him show you disrespect like that? So eventually we find out Mordecai, or Haman, really doesn't like this, and he decides that he wants to take Mordecai out. He wants to kill him, but he finds out he's a Jew, and he decides, I don't just want to kill this guy. I want to kill this guy and all of his people that I can find anywhere on the planet, in any of our kingdoms, any of our provinces. I'm going to kill this guy, and I'm going to kill all of his people. And so he hatches this plot to annihilate the Jewish people wherever they can be found in the kingdom of the Medes and the Persians. And the king says okay. And Haman gives him a bunch of money. It would be equivalent to like $200 million or something. I did the math today. Haman gives him a bunch of money. He's like, I'll even fund it. Let me pay for the slaughter and genocide of the Jewish people. So now, not only is Esther, you have this girl who was taken, lots of girls, but Esther among them, taken in to the king's palace against her choice and forced to sleep with him. Eventually, she becomes queen, and this parade of girls continues to happen. And now the Jewish people are suddenly discover that they're going to be wiped out, that the king has given permission for an entire ethnic group, an entire group of people to be wiped out. So you can imagine the effect that would have on the Jewish people, the fear and the anger. And I wonder where they sit with God at this point. They start to find this out, like, God, where are you? What are you doing? Why haven't you shown up? Why haven't you rescued us? What are you doing in this situation, in the world, in the circumstances that we face? So Mordecai, his response when he finds out about this is to tear his clothes. He puts on rags, basically, and he goes and he sits at the palace kind of doorway or whatever, the gateway to the palace, and he hangs out there, and he's in mourning along with the other Jewish people. Well, Esther is somewhere in the palace or in the harem, and she has no idea what's going on. Seems like some time has passed, but she doesn't know what's going on. She's sort of cloistered in this place where she's kept away from the reality of the world and what's going on in the world around her. But then she catches wind. She hears that Mordecai is mourning, and so she sends him new clothes because she heard his clothes were kind of torn up. So she sends him new clothes, and we're like, what's the matter? Dress and kind of fix yourself up. And Mordecai refuses. Mordecai then lets the messenger who came to him, brought the clothes to him, he lets the messenger know, I would like you to take this copy of the death order for Esther's people and give it to her and let her read it and explain the situation and ask her to go to the king and to beg for mercy and to plead for her people's life. And he asks this of Esther. So the messenger goes back and explains the situation to Esther. She reads the notice, figures out what's going on, and she has a very simple response, and I think it's a pretty normal human response in this sort of circumstance. She responds to Mordecai, I can't go to the king. I'm not allowed to go to the king unless he requests me. He hasn't requested me in 30 days, and I don't expect him to, and I can't just march into his room and present myself to him. The penalty for that is death, so I can't do what you're asking. If I go to the king, I'll die. And I want to read to you Mordecai's response to Esther. It's found in Esther chapter 4, verses 13 and 14. So Mordecai sent this reply to Esther. He said, "Don't think for a moment that because you're in the palace, you'll escape when all the other Jews are killed. If you keep quiet at a time like this, deliverance and relief for the Jews will rise from some other place, but you and your relatives will die. Who knows? Perhaps you were made queen for such a time as this." So we're going to come back to that last line and kind of talk about that and how it relates to us today. But this is a pretty significant situation, kind of a confrontation of Mordecai, kind of speaks the truth to Esther. And I can't imagine the pressure on this young girl after what she's been through and what she's experienced. And he tells her what's going on and challenges her to go to the king, that maybe she's the only one in a position to save or to rescue the Jewish people, and puts this on her, like, you got to go to the king. And she, her reaction is, I'm going to die. What you're saying, what you're asking me to do, the likelihood is that I'm going to pass away, that they'll kill me in punishment for that crime. And the pressure then on Esther. She goes from this young Jewish girl living in her family to taken away and stuck in this place and abused in these ways, and then made queen, and then continues to be hidden away and not allowed to really know what's going on in the world, and then discovers that her people are about to be annihilated. And Mordecai's like, you got to do something. This is yours to do. You may be the only one in a situation that can respond. So you imagine this sort of emotional process that Esther goes through, knowing that that to act, to step up, to stand up towards against this injustice could very well mean her own demise. So this gets us to kind of the climax of the story, and I'm just going to kind of flow through sort of quickly through the rest of the story, but you get a kind of picture of where we stand right now, the reality that the Jewish people are about to be annihilated, and that Esther is in this very unique position, largely because of the suffering that she's been through, to potentially do something about it. So Esther has this this idea, this thought, what Mordecai had said to her, rattling around in her mind, and contrasting that this may be hers to do, with the reality that it could mean her own. Certainly, it was not about her safety or her protection or her life or protecting her life. So Esther has all of this stuff in her mind, and her response to Mordecai at this point is this. She asks Mordecai to let all the Jewish people know in the city what was going on, and asked them to fast and pray for 3 days. So she asks all the Jewish people, fast and pray for 3 days, and I'll try to figure out a plan. I'll try to figure out what to do. And Esther's a pretty smart girl, and she comes up with a pretty unique plan, if you have a chance to read it. Pretty fascinating how she accomplishes this. But she eventually approaches the king without his permission, but he ends up forgiving her and kind of letting her pass, lets her come in. And she does this a couple of times and spends time with the king. She eventually, her strategy for this, she lets the king know what he keeps asking her, like, what do you want? Why are you coming to me? What can I do for you? And finally, she lets him know, there's somebody that's threatening my life. There's somebody who wants to kill me, and all my people, by the way. And he's like, who would dare to try to kill the queen? Who would do this? Who would be so bold as to seek the death of my queen and her people? And she reveals that she's Jewish at this point, lets him know, and that Haman was the one, this ruler, the second-in-command guy, was the one who was attempting to kill her and her people. And the king's reaction was to kill Haman instead. And so in order, the way this, the Persian, like, their rules were kind of weird. If the king made a rule, not even he could change it. So if he says everybody has to wear, like, orange clothes, and then one day he's like, no, I don't want people to wear orange clothes, I want people to wear brown clothes, he couldn't change it. He would have to say, okay, now you're allowed to wear brown over the orange. There we go. That way we're all, but you have to still wear orange because I said that before. So it's this weird, like, way of making rules and the way that the sort of country worked. And so he couldn't, an order had gone out to slaughter the Jews. There was a specific day that was picked the next year. And on that day, all of the people in the country were allowed, in the nation, were allowed to attack the Jews and kill them and steal their possessions. Well, he couldn't change that rule. So what he does instead is he says, oh, well, you're allowed to attack the Jews, but the Jews are allowed to defend themselves now. They weren't before, but now they can band together and they can rally and they can bear arms and they can work together to protect themselves. And so he sends that order out. It turns out that the Jews stand up to defend themselves. They have other people in the nation that come alongside of them, and they end up killing 75,000 of the enemies of the Jews, the people that wanted to kill the Jews off, 75,000 of them. end up dying as a result. So that's the way the king came up with like fixing all this stuff. Kind of terrible. Okay, so the story, as I mentioned, is kind of crazy. Going the wrong way here. But I want to go back to the challenge that Mordecai had given to Esther, because I think that's a key line that is really a challenge for us today. Esther said this in his statement to her, "Who knows, perhaps you were made queen for just such a time as this. Perhaps this is the reason that you were made queen. Perhaps this is the time and this is the moment that God was working towards when he made arranged for you to be king." So there's no place, when you look through the story of Esther, there's no place where God actually speaks. It's kind of interesting. When you look through the story of Esther, we don't see God speaking directly. We don't see a lot of mention of his name. There's certainly a faith on the part of Esther and the part of the people, but we don't ever get a moment where God speaks into it and says, "Oh, by the way, this is what I'm up to. Just to let you know, before all this happens, here's what I'm going to do and here's how I'm going to accomplish it." Or after the fact, "Here's what I was doing so that you know I was in it." He didn't speak up. There's no place in the book of Esther where we see God coming through, his voice shining through and saying, "This is why things are so crazy. This is why things are so awful in your circumstances." And so Esther and Mordecai and the Jewish people about to be slaughtered and us reading this story, we never get the chance to really understand what was God up to. What was he doing? What kind of questions would we ask God in that sort of situation? And I'm struck by Mordecai's question. Who knows if perhaps you were made queen for just such a time as this? Was God actually working through the horrible circumstances of Esther's life in order to save his people, in order to accomplish this thing? Not that he caused it, but he certainly didn't rescue her from the horrible things that she faced. But somehow God was able to be present in that and to use his people and to use Esther to accomplish something extraordinary. Through her suffering, she was in the exact right place at the exact right time to be a spokeswoman for the people, for God's people, and what he wanted to accomplish through them. Esther didn't, we can tell from the story, she didn't know what God was up to. In fact, her response was like, "I don't want to do that. I don't want to join God in this because I'll die if I do that. Who knows if perhaps you were made queen for just such a time as this?" And with that question rattling around in her mind, she risked everything. She risked her life. She stepped up and did something she wasn't supposed to do that very well could have resulted in her own death. She sacrificed her own well-being to rescue and to serve and to save others. So one of Jesus' close friends, the Apostle Peter, he wrote this in 1 Peter in his letter to Christians. He said, "Each of you should use whatever gift you have received to serve others faithfully, as faithful stewards of God's grace in its various forms. Each of you should use whatever gift you've received to serve others." Now, you start to personalize this story, you may not feel like you have a whole lot to offer the world. I don't know where you are, or some of you I do know the situations you're in, and that you don't feel like you have a whole lot to offer the world or this community or the people around you. But Esther's story is a challenge to us. Now, Peter's words are a challenge to us. God isn't looking for men and women, for teenagers and kids who have it all together. He isn't looking for people who have amazing stories. He isn't looking for people who have cleaned up, nice, pretty stories. He's looking for people in the right place at the right time who are willing to courageously use whatever they have, whatever gifts they have, whatever's in their possession, whatever energy and love and heart that they have to serve others. God, I want you to get this, because it's critical that we understand this about God, that God is not looking for cleaned up, good, amazing, powerful people. He's looking for people who surrender to him, who love him and are willing to sacrifice their own well-being for the good of the people around him. That's the thing that draws God near and allows God to use us in powerful ways, even in the midst of our chaos, even in the midst of our brokenness and our foolishness and all and our misunderstanding of what God's up to, all of that stuff. God can come through us and work and accomplish great things when we are faithful and surrender to him and allow him to work through us, even at our own peril. There's an organization that I just, you may know of this organization. I don't know if anybody knows the Corner Project. Somebody familiar with the Corner Project? I just recently became aware of them, and I think I kind of got a gist of their mission and kind of what they do. And this may not be all of it, so if I'm misrepresenting we'll find that out because I think we're going to be talking to them more because they seem pretty cool. But what the Corner Project does essentially is they work with recovering addicts and homeless men and women, and their goal is to help those people, to train them to serve in their community. Like their mission and what they do is take recovering addicts and people coming out of homelessness and help them to learn how to give back and to contribute to their community. People that, this is like this, what they're doing, it's like the story of God. This is what God does for all of us. Like takes people who are recovering addicts, people who are recovering, lost, wandering, stumbling around in the darkness people, and helps us, gives us gifts so that we can then turn around and serve, use those to serve the people. It's an extraordinary, really, picture, I think, of what God is doing in the world and the way that he works. So I was, while I was away this past week, I spent a lot of time thinking about you guys and wishing I was back here and got to go to the prayer thing that happened on Wednesday. But at some point in my kind of processing, I decided that I would make a list of all the things that I could think of that I know that you guys are doing in this community through your relationships and friendships and whatever. And I just kind of wrote down and kept writing a list of things that I could think of. And it was really encouraging to me because they weren't like astounding, extraordinary, some of them are pretty amazing, but astounding, extraordinary things, the very real, normal things that God is using us to accomplish. And I decided this morning that I wanted to read those to you. So I'm going to go down through these. They're in no particular order, totally random. Some of them may not make sense to you because you don't really know what I'm talking about, but I just want to share some of these things because it was very encouraging to me. And it represents the very simple ways that you and I, that us as a people, are using what we have to love and to care and to serve for our community. So let me read some of these for you. So people learning Spanish, the number of people in our church that just keep saying, I'm trying to figure out Spanish, I'm trying to learn it because I want to be able to connect more with my community. I want to be able to speak the language of my people and my community. The English is a second language class downstairs. If you guys don't know, every Sunday we have a group that meets and teaches English as a second language downstairs, and it's just a beautiful, really beautiful thing. TLC and Prayer and Whiskey, the men's group and women's group, meet guys and girls getting together to just pray together and encourage one another and talk about what's going on in life is a beautiful thing. Mom's Refreshment, the group gathers regularly to encourage and pray for moms in certain situation, kind of season in their life. The youth group meets regularly, creating a safe space for students to connect with students and students to connect with loving, caring adults to be present in their life as they try to figure out what it means to be a student these days. Our band, learning and leading us in Spanish songs. They don't have to do that. It's a commitment that we have to speak the languages of our community and to figure out a way to do that. And our band leading us in that way is a beautiful thing. A couple of weeks ago, a group of us went to a workshop called Church is a Good Neighbor, and it represents really our commitment to learn what does it mean to have more and more impact in our community, to be more and more loving and equipped to care for and to respond to the needs in our community. Uptown Soccer, teaching and connecting with students through soccer and a little bit of mentoring that happens and different things that happen there. Many of you guys get involved in like community groups, and I could make a list of these, but community groups and interest groups and sports groups. And I think a large part of that is just to build relationships and connect. And the reality is that as you do that, you may be the only Christian that some of these people know, the only Christian that they'll ever come into contact because of your willingness to get involved in the things in the community and just have fun and do life alongside of others. We have moms and dads that hang out regularly in playgrounds, and this has become an inspiration to me, that spend time in playgrounds, connecting with other families, encouraging them, finding ways to love and serve and care for their children. It's a beautiful thing. We have teachers and education administrators caring for students of all ages. We have people in our church that work in schools from little kids all the way up to universities and working with college students, mentoring and caring and serving and encouraging those students. We have guys teaching classes in prisons, a couple of dudes in our church that do that. It's a beautiful thing. We have restaurant workers sprinkled around the neighborhood, connecting and serving people in our community, being smiling, happy servants present in our community. in such a way that God can use and build relationships through that. Pathways mentoring program that we're involved in, Operation Exodus, Young Life and the ministry of Young Life and what they're doing in the lives of kids. The Thanksgiving food distribution that's coming up this week. I could go on and on and on. I want to end with this one. We help people move into new apartments. So Gio and Delali just moved, yes. They sent me a note, and I didn't get it in time to share it with you last week, but we had a number of people from Everyday Church that helped them, and they sent me a note to say thank you to you guys. And so I'm going to read it right now because it fits in perfectly with what we're talking about. Gio and I would love to thank everyone for helping us move. It reminded us not only how loving our community is, but it also reminded us of what church is all about, being there for one another in more than one more ways than one. We're so grateful and appreciative. There's so many ways that you guys are using your gifts to love and care for and serve our community. And we look at the story of Esther and the way God used her, her willingness in the midst of the chaos of her life to step up and to care for people. And what Peter said about using our gifts to serve and to care for one another and serve one another. And I think that we as a church have been doing, we have a great history of that, and it's a beautiful thing. So I want to put this, that line up here. Who knows if perhaps you were made queen for just a time like this, and I left it blank. Can you see the blank? Oh, is there we go. That's it. Okay, so here's what I want you to do. Just for a moment, think about that blank where it said queen for Esther, but what does that represent for you? Who knows if perhaps you were made for such a time as this. Maybe you were made a mom or a dad or a restaurant worker for just such a time as this. Maybe you, perhaps you were made a teacher or a professor or a principal or an administrator in a school for such a time as this. Perhaps you were made a rugby player or a soccer player for such a time as this. A mentor, a coworker, an employee. Maybe you were made a friend of your neighbors for such a time as this. Each one of you should use whatever gift you have received to serve others as faithful stewards of God's grace in its various forms. The picture that Peter paints right there, I want to make sure that we catch. So the idea behind this is that we have received incredible grace and favor and love and acceptance from God. And we hold that. We're stewards of that. We hold that grace in our hands, and we have the opportunity to hold on to it, or we have the opportunity to serve other people, passing that grace and favor and acceptance and love on to the people around us. That we become stewards of God's grace, and we distribute that grace by loving and serving, using what we have, whatever it is, big or small, rich or poor, whatever it is, using that and administering it to the people around us, serving and using our gifts for others. So I want to wrap up right now, but here's what I want us to end with. This past week has been pretty rough on a lot of people in our community and around the city. Trump's election as president, and particularly his frequent harsh words and his threats towards people in this country, have left a lot of people frightened and betrayed. The story of Esther, of God showing up in the midst of the chaos and the fear, is encouraging to me, particularly in our circumstances. But as with Esther, God is looking to use you and me to help the people around us, to stand up, to use our positions, to use our influence, to love and to protect the people around us and to care for others. So I'm going to put a couple of questions on the screen, and this is how we're going to wrap up. Got two questions I'm going to put up on the screen, and like you to take some time to just read those and talk to God about them. So you might read those and you have an answer that comes to your mind and you know who it is. But if you don't, just ask God, who am I supposed to encourage? Who am I here to protect? Who am I here to help? But spend some time. I'm going to give you about 5 minutes and just process through and pray through these couple of questions. And then a little bit, I've got a couple people that are going to come up and pray for us together. And then I'll come back up and wrap it up. So the two questions, who looks to you for encouragement? Who is it in your building, in your workplace, in your family, on the street? Who are the people that look to you for encouragement? And who is God asking you to fight for, to defend, to help in the world around you? So take some time to process and pray through those questions.